This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. In the age of Me Too, a new workshop is exploring sexual harassment through Shakespeare. The workshop, titled And Speak I Will, delves into the themes of three of the Bard's plays, which of course were written long before we even heard the word hashtag. The workshop is led by Tina Packer, who's founding artistic director of Shakespeare and Company. She's currently the Kunkemüller Artist in Residence at Boston Conservatory at Berkeley, and she joins us in the studio to talk about this. Tina Packer, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you.
So Shakespeare is known for a long study, right, of male-female relationships and the battle of the sexes many times. What do you hope to do with this workshop?
Well, really, just as we look at this whole thing of sexual harassment, look at the depth of it, look how long it's been going on for, look at where the history comes from, and because Shakespeare records human experience, it's all the way through the plays. I mean, not just the three that we've chosen, but, you know, almost any play, there's somewhere, something about some person in power hitting on usually a woman, but occasionally a man, usually so in a way that they don't want. And so I think to have that perspective, and I think, Deb, also when you're dealing with a great artist dealing with this thing, you can go into the nastiness of it and actually come out wholer than you went in. So that the poetry or the creative energy allows you to be healthier after you've been into it than when you went. Once you come out the other side, it's a healthier state.
So that's why you're doing it.
Yeah, well, it's in part, yeah.
So let's talk about the three plays in your workshop.
Yeah.
So first, Measure for Measure.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
This is one of Shakespeare's earliest, yeah. Maybe the earliest.
No, that's Taming of the Shrew, that's the earliest.
Oh.
This is a later one.
Okay.
And he was writing about what happens when the church takes over the laws of the land. So very topical, very topical.
Right.
And does the conceptualization of what God says should be true, does that make good law? And, of course, the Puritans were taking over the city of London at the time Shakespeare was writing this, and they were stopping bear baiting and cockfighting. They were closing down all the brothels and the playhouses. So it touched Shakespeare very dearly, this particular topic. And, of course, this was the great upheaval. And where does sexuality go when the church says no sex before marriage, and in this case you're going to get killed if you do, or nobody having, you know, being able to do brothels or anything like that, when of course those Puritans then came over here after that struggle had, I mean, I don't mean that it wasn't also in England, but
right,
by and large that Puritan thinking came to Boston and the city on the hill.
Mm.
And so it was important for us to do Measure for Measure, because in fact that's that streak of authoritarianism actually landed up in Boston. So as I'm a good American citizen, I felt that we should do it.
You know, we actually have a clip from Measure for Measure from a 1997 BBC documentary, Conjuring Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And we should tell a little bit about the story here. So a woman's about to enter a convent, right?
Yes.
Isabella.
Yeah.
Her brother's been arrested and sentenced to death.
Yes, for having sex before marriage.
For having sex.
As Shakespeare himself did, by the way.
And she goes to a deputy,
yes,
or sheriff, as
yeah,
we might call someone like that now, Angelo.
Yeah.
Saying, please don't kill my brother. And Angelo says, well, if you sleep with me,
yeah,
maybe I'll spare your brother,
yeah,
right? So here in this clip, David Tennant is playing Angelo,
yeah,
and Catherine Cusack is Isabella. And Angelo has just made his proposal,
okay,
right, for her brother's
yeah
life. And he tries to force himself on Isabella. And,
yeah,
and she threatens to go public. Let's listen.
Yeah.
I will proclaim thee, Angelo. Look for it. Sign me a present pardon for my brother, or with an outstretched throat I'll tell the world aloud what man thou art.
Who will believe thee, Isabel? My unsoiled name, the austereness of my life, my vouch against you and my place of estate will so your accusation overweigh that you will stifle up in your own report and smell of calumny.
Hmm, who will believe you, Isabel?
Yeah,
right?
Very, isn't it? Powerful.
Yeah. I mean, we hear that all the time,
yeah,
now. Was
yeah
that also a reason why?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in fact, I mean, if you just look at the Harvey Weinstein case, you see how many, 80 women? How many women were there before there were actually enough to say, we're going to sue you? And how many women, year after year, maybe said something about it and nobody did anything about it because he was more powerful? And anyway, everybody wanted jobs with him, so you shut up, you know, and we won't even start on the president.
But, you know, there's a part in Measure for Measure that also talks about Isabella's anger, right?
Yeah.
And her rage.
Absolutely.
And how you can go too far when you look at the world in such black and white. And so did you want to get at that as well?
Well, I am trying to get at that because I don't know what the answer is. And I don't know if you know what the answer is. But what kind of structure, because we have to have structures in order to live together. On the other hand, if you make rigid laws that can't be broken, what does that do to human relationships? You know, how do you have the nuance of sexual attraction, sexual approach? You know, what is that? And that's such an individual thing. So when clearly, I think you should not be able to harass people. But there's a huge area between what looks like a piece of honest approach to one person and a dishonest approach to another person. And the anger that women in particular feel when they've been violated and the signals have not been picked up of, no, this is not okay with me. Actually, I'm not interested. You know, it's a huge thing, and it's something we've all dealt with. It's not as if it's one in 20 women. It's not. It's every woman practically, or 9 out of 10 women.
Right.
You know, so how do you manage that, Deb? And especially in our day when everybody's on their phones all the time. There's instant information. There's dating sites everywhere. How do we manage this? Because it does have to be managed.
Yeah. And are we managing it now?
Not terribly well.
No,
I think at least we're having the conversation, though, which we weren't before. So we're having the conversation. And I think that Isabel's anger and rage, and in a way, she was dealing with it by going into the nunnery, so saying, I'm removing myself from the whole thing. At the end, does she come out of the nunnery or not? Shakespeare leaves it ambiguous. We don't know whether she says yes to the Duke, and then even that, you know.
Right.
So the Duke at the end says, well, actually, if you'll marry me, you know, blah. You think, what? We've gone through all this with this other bloke and now you're coming on to it?
Now, what about The Taming of the Shrew, the other play that I
yes.
thought was earlier than
yes.
this? Forgive my Shakespeare history here mistake, but this is also in your workshop.
Yep.
Why?
Because I wanted, well, two things. It was totally acceptable in Shakespeare's day for a wife to tame, for a husband to tame his wife. There were pamphlets about it. There was advice about it. You know, you can hit her, but you can't kill her.
Hmm.
You know, so
if
she's disobedient, you can do all these things. And everything a wife owned belonged to her husband. If he died, she got a third of it so she could live until she got married again, and then it all went to her new husband. Now, that law was in practice then, and it actually didn't come off, because I know when I got married the first time in the 60s, my husband's name went on to the house deeds, not mine. So, you know, it's been a long practice this about I own you, I own everything you own. So I first of all wanted to make that clear that that's been going on for a long time. But the other thing that seemed to me that we've been telling a lie about, which Shakespeare actually I think was probably also telling a lie about, except because he was a great artist, he put some depth in it. You know, I will tell the anger of my heart, or else my heart concealing it will break. So he has Kate saying that. But that he actually thought it was okay for men to do this to women. But when you look at the text, how does he tame her? He starves her. He takes away her clothes. He won't let her say what she wants to say. He won't let her go where she wants to go. And so she ends up acquiescing and doing what he wants. And of course, if you play it as in the traditional style, everybody's happy ever after, except you and I know that those women would all be on tranquilizers today, you know, if you weren't allowed to read what you wanted, say what you wanted, you know, you would, or you'd have gone to baby doll cuteness like Marilyn Monroe and just, he's so lovely. So you avoid the whole issue.
I love that you do voices while we're talking. But, you know, I've heard some argue that actually it's a love story in Taming of the Shrew.
That's how we make it acceptable. But why, if it's a true love story, wouldn't there be 50-50 here? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't she be allowed to say what she wants and he be allowed to say what he wants, and they'd work it backwards and forwards? Why does she have to say exactly that the sun is the moon and the moon is the sun? So he's very clear, say as I say or we will never go. So he's really clear that she's got to say as he says. If it were true love, Deb, they would be negotiating their relationship, and both of them would want to be whole human beings.
They would. Well, I don't want to argue about that with you, certainly, Andrea, but I have read that before. And I just, was Shakespeare a misogynist?
I think he was at that point, because he's right in the beginning of his career and he's looking at what's going to make a good story and what's going to sell. But no, by the time he gets to the end of his life, he's saying, for God's sake, follow the women. For God's sake, do what the women say we should be doing, or at least negotiate women's ways of knowing. Because, I mean, the very last thing he wrote about anybody was the baby Elizabeth in Henry VIII, and it's all about goodness grows with her. Mm. Truth will be spoken in her day. It's a eulogy to the feminine spirit. And so, no, by the time he finished, he actually knew the power of women, and both how, if they were thwarted, how destructive they could be, but also how enlightened they are. And you know, the other play, if I can go to it just for a moment, which is Troilus and Cressida, is a play about men perpetually at war and what does it do to them. And if they live by an honor culture, women don't really have a place in that except as objects of fantasy. And in fact, if you take your wife's advice, that's shaming and dishonorable. And so all the women's voices in Troilus and Cressida are shut up. And it destroys love again. So it's and then there's a kind of collective gang rape in Troilus and Cressida. So that was another reason I thought that we should put it in, because it's, you know, and the idea is she's as false as Cressida and he's as true as Troilus. But if you look at it, he's the one who's untrue to her because he doesn't defend her. He doesn't stand up for her. He doesn't say, no, she can't go over to the Greek side. She's my wife. You know, and because he's secretly kind of married her. And so he doesn't defend her, and she's left to fend for herself, and she totally crumbles in the face of it. So for me, he's as false as Troilus, and she's as true as Cressida.
Aren't you concerned by going all the way back to use these old plays that in a way you're saying, this has been going on forever?
I do, and it has been going on forever, and I think it's important. I mean, you know, Zeus, this is 3000 when BC, Zeus was accused of raping women. You know, and so that's the earliest of our Western culture ideas. So it's always been acceptable. So it's a huge, huge task we have. Huge. And so I hope by going back, we can put it into some perspective. And the courage of women now to actually stand up for themselves and say, let's look at it differently, and how can we have whole human beings? And it's not just men and women, it's the whole gender fluidity, it's the whole way in which we look at our sexuality, which is up for grabs. Oh, that's a terrible thing to say, isn't it? it's the whole of the way in which we look at sexuality that needs to be re-examined. And it's going to take 50 years or something, but we've got to do it because women need to live whole lives.
What are you hearing from the students about what they're going to bring forward to this?
Well, these students come from the Contemporary Theatre Division of Boston Conservatory. So they've been working on a lot of devised pieces. So they create their own theatre. This is their first classical foray. And so I think at first they wondered what it had to do with them. Then as we actually started getting into the depth of the text, then they definitely start. I mean, just the bit that you quoted, you know, to whom should I complain? Did I tell this? Who would believe me? Suddenly felt very here and now to them. And the idea of what the function of theatre is. It's actually to say the things that can't be spoken so that we can examine them without actually having to... So you can look at the experience of it without having to go through the trauma of the thing itself. They really clocked onto that. They really said, yes, this is something that we can use, we can understand as we look at ourselves, our own lives, and then have some language to say it in. Because Shakespeare is a great wordsmith, so there's great language to say it with.
All right. Well, Tina Packer, founding artistic director of Shakespeare and Company. She's currently the Kunkka Mueller Artist in Residence at the Boston Conservatory at Berkeley. She'll be presenting the workshop And Speak I Will at the Boston Center for the Arts tonight through Saturday. We'll have more information about that at our website, radioboston.org. Tina, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Deb.
Stay with us. Coming up, the new movie about the continuing mystery surrounding the late Ted Kennedy and the accident on Chappaquiddick. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.